This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and what are you wearing? I'm only asking because Calvin Klein was born on this day in 1942, the same year noted denim collector Len Penzo retired. While talk of Len's retirement has been greatly exaggerated, we'll discuss some of the biggest personal finance myths that need to be busted with the woman behind Afford Anything, Paula Pant. And from LenPenzo.com, Calvin Klein's favorite model, Kate Moss. I'm just kidding. Kate's busy binging kale smoothies and doing a chia seed cleanse or something. It's just Len Penzo. And finally, Mr. Acid Wash himself, OG. Of course, that's not all, because we're coming down the home stretch of our year-long trivia.
Did he just go away?
Joe sounded like Chris Cross.
Sounded like he had a stroke.
It did sound like he got partway through the intro and said, "I'm taking a nap." Hey, everybody.
Really?
Welcome to Live on Fireside. I'm Joe Salci. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. Yeah, Doug, you completely went away there at the end, but I think we got it. I think we're good. How are you?
Other than the brain aneurysm, I'm great.
I don't know what happened. After maybe Mace's retribution for making so much fun of Len. And since we mentioned him, the guy who hasn't retired and keeps threatening to retire, Mr. Len Penzo's here. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. You know, I just got back the other day. I went to dinner at one of my favorite places, Benihana.
It is.
And wonderful. So I'm in a really good mood. Even though the prices went up a little bit.
But you've like a Benihana hangover, like a happiness hangover. How long does that last for you?
A good 48 hours. I mean, especially if the chef makes that chicken fried rice, that's where they really shine.
I thought you were going to say if he does the choo-choo train with the onions, like that's when you really get going.
We were sitting there, and what's funny is we all pretend that we've never seen those jokes before, right? And the poor chefs, they have to pretend like they're doing it for the first time. It's kind of funny when you think about
it. Did he put the shrimp tails in his pocket?
No, he shot the shrimp tails into the top of his
hat.
But he also took the lobster tails and got those into the top of his hat, which was pretty good.
Well, you can see what kind of budget the Penzos have. We never have lobster tails. I don't even know.
And you know what's funny? They had, like I said, the prices went up. Like, the prices are going up for everything. But so, I still love you, Benihana. Mm. But you know how they have the names for the different meals? Like, yes. You don't just say, I want the steak and shrimp.
It's got to be Rocky's Choice.
Yeah, they have stuff like it's the land and sea or the deluxe treat or the hibachi supreme. So,
by the way, Benihana, if you want to sponsor the show, since we're spending 10 minutes talking about you, feel free. Email me, Joe at Stecky Benjamins.
Well, maybe not after I make this little joke here, because I was going to say what they really need to be calling one of these is the King's Ransom. At least the one I got was because it cost.
I don't know, man. Look at even the price of meat at the grocery store. It is ugly no matter where you at. And speaking of the guy who's the lobster tail on this podcast, not sure if that's a good one or not, Mr. OG is here.
Enough. I eat lobster tail and shrimp tail all the time. I don't eat the shrimp tails, but
no,
gross.
But you love Benihana like the Len?
No. I'm not a fan of like watching my food be prepared.
No. Oh, I think that's fun. Paula, have you ever been to Benihana? Paula, does he know what Benihana is? This is Paula Pant from Afford Anything right here.
I believe that I went to a Benihana once or twice when I was in college.
I was going to say for her 11th birthday.
Yeah. So it's been a good 15 years since I've been to a Benihana.
I don't know, man. When you're coming through Texarkana, we'd love to take you to Benihana, but we don't have one.
You don't have one in Texarkana?
This is a very exclusive town, Paula. Shock.
No, they have something called Benny Yeehaw.
I thought Benihana was like, for the amount you talk about it, I figured it must be the restaurant in Texarkana.
It doesn't hold up to the sizzler here. Oh, and by the way, Len, that's Benny's Yeehaw. Benny is the guy's name. It's Benny's Yeehaw.
Okay. And what's better? Is it Sizzler or Golden Corral?
It's we would say Sizzler on this show. But Golden Corral fights them all day here in Texarkana.
Like two San Diego news stations, we fight each other.
Everybody's wondering when we're going to get to the point. We're going to talk today about five savings myths that need to be busted. Personal finance myths. Let's get into it. But first, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Stackers, controlling your money on a day-to-day basis comes down to two things. Number one, great communication, either with yourself or with a partner. And by great communication, what do I mean? I mean, sitting down with your app of choice and putting together your strategy based on what you spent the week before. It's super easy, a 20-minute meeting a week. You look through your expenses, and then you plot out what are you going to do next week. And you know what? That might seem little, but the big things stem from that. And if you have an app that keeps that in front of you, that helps make it even easier. And the app Cheryl and I use is Monarch Money. We've been using it now for about a year. As you may know, I've used lots of different solutions, and this is by far the one I've stuck with the longest. It helps Cheryl and I collaborate. We can talk about our financial goals. For us, it's travel. We're also adding to our house. We have a goal in a few years to really work on our lawn as well and just make it a pretty place to live. But the travel piece, as you know, if you've listened to me for any amount of time, that's a big one. And what's cool is I can put our financial independence goals and our journey up right next to our budget, because everything at Monarch is very intuitive. It is very customizable. So what the heck is Monarch? You're sitting there wondering to yourself, aren't you? Person I just made up. Yes. Let me tell you what it is. It's an all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you comprehensive view of all your accounts, your investments, your transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track your progress toward your financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now, Stackers, because you're a Stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. Got to have the /Benjamins to get the extended 30-day free trial so you can see that you'll like it as much as I do. How does it work? Well, it's very intuitive. It has a simple, intuitive design that makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. You can collaborate with your partner, family, or your financial advisor. What's cool is you can invite all these people to your account at no extra cost, so you can collaborate and everybody gets their own login info and everybody gets a joint view of your finances. And as I mentioned earlier, it's customizable, and best yet, it's ad-free privacy you can trust. No ads. You're not being marketed. When I had other apps that were free, I got marketed all the time. Well, not only do they not do that, they also don't sell your data to third parties. After trying out Monarch for myself and using it for about a year now, on a daily basis, I totally get why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, because you're a stacker, you're going to get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/Benjamins. That's Monarch Money, MONARCHMONEY.com/Benjamins for your extended 30-day free trial. All right, now we're ready to get into it. Let's roll. This piece comes to us from a Forbes advisor that we're going to riff off of today, written by George Mitra and Armand Joshi. It's actually written for Forbes advisor in India and for an Indian audience. But you know what? I think savings myths, no matter where you are. And this is what I love about this show. I got an email just last week from Scotland. And a gentleman says, you know what? You sometimes talk about U.S. law, but all this stuff translates no matter where you are in the world. And I know we have a few listeners in India as well. We're in 47 different countries, which is, it's so weird whenever I see those numbers. But we're not here to talk about the numbers. We're here to talk about these myths. We're going to start off by talking about the five they have here, and then maybe our team here will have, in the second half of the show, will have some myths of their own. But the first myth on this piece is myth: savings equals money to be kept in a savings account. And Paula, let's start with you. Do you think this is a big problem with people just starting out saving, that they don't know the difference between saving and investing, or they think there's a difference between the two?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that because so many people are familiar with the terminology of a checking account and a savings account, people often, you know, especially if they're at the beginning of their personal finance journey, they haven't necessarily spent a lot of time thinking through the nuances of what does it mean to save, you know, the way that we all have nerded out about it. It can be very easy to think that savings is the money that goes into a savings account. I mean, based on the name, that seems on the surface obvious, even though it's erroneous.
OG, I know that when you meet with young people, you have to see this as kind of a hurdle you got to get through with people.
Well, we use the word savings and investing kind of simultaneously when we're talking about either of those things. So it's important to be specific about it, right? Savings is for things that are short-term, time-bound, you know, in the next under 3 years, maybe under 5 years. And investing is for everything else. And sometimes we say savings when we mean investing. Sometimes we say investing when we mean savings. So using the right language, I think, is super important.
Well, and that's interesting for you, and I think for Paula, based on what you said, for either one of you two, just thinking about this, we do use the words, I use the words interchangeably, but I've been saving and investing for a long time. Part of me thinks that that's a good thing to use them interchangeably because, I don't know, when I first started, I thought that investing was this big speed bump, right? That I was going to have to learn tons and tons and tons. And what of course we know is that you really kind of got to wade in a little bit. So is it good that we use those terms interchangeably, or should we, as people that know what we're doing, should we be careful about that?
No, I think we have to be very careful about it because people hear the word savings and we might mean investing. You know, you need to save $500 a month to fund your retirement. You need to save $500 a month into your Roth IRA. But what we mean is invest, and has different kind of connotations to it. So
Paula, you agree?
I do agree. Yeah. I think that, you know, I've received emails from my audience, people who've said things like, you know, gee, I would have loved to have saved this year, but I paid off all of my debt instead, you know, or gee, I would have loved to have saved this year, but I really wanted to max out my Roth IRA. And I, you know, I have to write them back and be like, if you did those things, you did save, and then sort of start to introduce this concept that all savings is deferred spending. It's just a matter of how long are you deferring it? Are you deferring it for 30 years and then you're going to use it in retirement, in which case you're going to invest it in the interim? Are you deferring it for 8 years and then you're going to use it as a down payment on a home? How long are you deferring the spending? That's the deciding line between what you're going to literally keep in cash versus what you're going to put into more volatile assets. And I don't think that comes across when words get used interchangeably.
Len, we're going to talk a little bit later about risk, but what is wrong with saving? You know, people consider saving money. What's wrong with just saving and not investing? Like, why wouldn't I put all my money in fixed accounts that earn a set rate of return? That sounds safe.
Well, yeah. The problem is if you're putting your money into savings, just short term, like a passive, savings accounts at your bank or what have you, you know, that's not putting your money to work. Your money's sitting on a lounge chair. It's just kicking back, doing nothing. If you want to make that money work for you and grow, you have to take a risk and you have to invest. And that's the big difference, right, between savings and investing. Savings basically, you have a time component and a risk component. Saving, if you're just saving, you really don't have much of a risk component. But also what that comes down to is no risk component. You're not going to make that money work for you. And in a high inflationary environment, your real returns from your savings account, you're actually losing money slowly over time. So you just have to keep that in mind. If you want your money to work for you and to grow, you have to invest. And doing that takes risk.
You could be very safely losing money.
You can be safely, you can over time, right? Now, it's not a big deal over a short period of time. I mean, I have money in savings accounts right now, and I know I'm losing money to inflation right now. My real return is in that savings account is it's over time. It's slowly losing money, but not enough for me to worry about. You know, the convenience of having that savings for emergencies or for saving for something that I want really near term, like a vacation in the next year or something.
Or lottery tickets.
Lottery scratchers. Right. Scratchers for Christmas. Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, that you don't worry about that. You don't worry about that. But if you're going to think you're going to get rich putting your money, you know, and get ready for retirement by just keeping it in a savings account, you are sadly mistaken.
Number two here is a retirement plan before 40 is too early. And I think we have two different audiences on the show, and I'm going to go with the general audience across the world, which is I don't need to start saving into a plan like a 401k or a retirement plan before I'm 40 years old because I've got so many other priorities. Somebody says that to you, OG, what do you say back to them?
The problem with waiting is it gets exponentially more expensive. You know, there's a lot of stuff that seems very important in the moment that you're doing it, and probably is. I mean, I'm 44 next month, and I wish that I would have done a better job of investing when I was in my early 20s, and I didn't, and because I had other stuff that was going on in my life, and that other stuff was super important at the time, and I always thought like, well, I'll just eventually, you know, next year I'll make more money, and then I can, you know, invest it then. And it finally got to the point where I just said, okay, I can't keep on having the focus be on tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like we have to just do something now, even if it's just the littlest amount. And it is like any other habit. It's like a gym habit or an eating healthy habit or something like that. If you start doing it, it becomes addicting, you know, like, oh, I got to put money in my account today and that was fun and it felt pretty good to pay off my debt or to do this other thing. So I want to do it again. I want to continue to build that muscle and continue going to that gym, so to speak. But I think it's really tempting to say, well, as soon as I knock out all these you know, short-term things, then I'll get to the long-term stuff. The good news is that if you do wait until you're 40, you still have plenty of time. I think a lot of people think that's the other side of it, right? Like, oh, well, I'll just, you know, I'm 50, I could never make it. It's like, no, 20 years is a long time to invest. And to use compounding. Now, is it better to have started when you were 19?
Yeah,
absolutely. But if you are past, if you're past that, now you're 40 or 45 or 50 or 55, you don't have to just throw in the towel and say, well, I'll never make it, because you can still make a pretty big impact by being disciplined now. It can be a little more difficult, but it's doable.
We spoke with some people from Camp Fi who started at 50 and were able to retire at 60, which was amazing. Now, given they had, Stephen had secured a really good job, but he knew that he had his work cut out for him and was able to shovel. So even though he had the ability to shovel, he used that shovel pretty well.
Wow, he started at zero at age 50?
Age 50 and retired
at
60.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. It was fantastic. Len, while you're commenting here, you know, they talk about starting at 40. So do you agree with OG? The best time to start is a little bit immediately, or should you at least get an emergency fund first or pay off debt first? Like, where do you come down on when to start your retirement plan?
Yeah, I think when you're really just starting out in early 20s, I think, yes, you should get your emergency fund first. I mean, you have so much time ahead of you. If it takes you that year to get that emergency fund up, it ain't going to kill you, you know? I also think, though, that being said, it pays to start as early as you can because, as I've said this before, the beauty of being young is you can make mistakes and you have so much time to recover. You know, when you start at 40 or you start at 50, you have very little margin for error. So you've got all that time. Take advantage of it. And that's your training wheels, really. You can make mistakes I know it hurts if you make a mistake at any age, but when you're in your 20s, it's so easy to recover.
Yeah. In hindsight, like some of the mistakes I made with $1,000, right? Made sure I didn't make those mistakes with $100,000 later on.
Yeah. I remember when I was in my 20s and I'd lose $1,000 on an investment or 50, it felt like the end of the world.
Devastating.
Yeah. Devastating. But trust me, I mean, you've got so much time and it's well worth the risk.
Paul, I want to turn this on its head because the second half of our audience is on the exact opposite side. Like some people are, most people are like, well, I got so much to do before 40. I'll wait until I'm 40 to start. The other half is thinking about the way I read this initially, which is that if you decide to retire before you're early, that's too early. And that's our FIRE audience, right? Like, what are you talking about? Retire at 35? Are you drunk? But is retire before 35? Is that too early to set your sights on retirement if you're 20?
Well, I think it's perfectly fine. Your goal can be whatever you want your goal to be. And the beauty of a goal is that it motivates you to become the type of person that you need to be in order to achieve that thing. So
I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's not an original thought. I read it somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, no, and I was thinking of Michelangelo saying something to that. So I believe somebody has said something similar to that. But Michelangelo was talking about something which I do love in the spirit of what you're saying, Paula, which is how great is it to set your goal too high and then mm-hmm. achieve this greatness but miss the goal, right? Versus set your goal too low and easily make it. So you set your goal at 35 and, okay, you didn't retire till 37. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Well, and more importantly, you develop the habits that would get you to that goal. So if you set the goal of retiring at 35, all right, great. In order to reach that goal, you develop all of these habits of efficient living, wise, moderated, well thought out version of frugality, investing, you know, exercising the investing muscle and learning how to take thoughtful risks. You know, those are all of the habits that you develop that you then put into practice for life. And if that gets you to your goal, great. But I think almost anyone who's achieved any major goal, whether that goal is something related to finance or fitness or career, I think most of us understand that the reaching the goal itself is not necessarily the point. It's developing the habits. It's the journey there. And then once you hit that milestone, cool. Now it's time to set a new one, and you already have the character and the habits in place that will allow you to move towards that next one.
I want to have you dive into something a little more that you said, which is you talked about having well thought out frugality. And you and I have talked about this, but I don't know if we've talked about it with microphones on. What does that mean versus just frugality?
Anything in excess can be toxic. And so frugality, when taken to an extreme, can be detrimental to your life, to your health, to your relationships. So frugality, it isn't that less is more, i.e. spending less is always necessarily better. There are boundaries and limits to what is the wise middle ground versus what is too far over on the, you know, a disruptive end of the extreme. And oftentimes, if you are frugal to a disruptive end of the extreme, it points to some underlying emotional insecurity, some anxiety, some other underlying problem besides the proximate problem that you would need to fix.
And that's why we know that Len doesn't have a problem because he gets the lobster tail. So he's good.
Yes, I do.
That's exactly it. Len, while I've got you, the third myth on their list is you need a lot of money to invest. And they say, well, that's wrong. What do you think the right amount is to have before you start trying to invest?
Well, you can start with $10 if you want. I mean, you can buy one stock and make it, you know, $10 a week. You don't need that much money at all. I got my daughter who's, she's just getting started and she, you know, she's, investing, oh, I don't know, maybe on average $100 a week. I'm guessing right now at her tender age with her new job. But it
all into platinum.
You don't need a lot.
All into platinum coins.
Actually, no, in the stock. So she's got her own Schwab account. I've taught her how to do. I mean, and she enjoys it. And it's like she enjoys watching it go up, and she notices sometimes when it goes down as well. But she's hooked, so which is great.
I love that idea of starting with $10. I think I'm with you. OG, do you agree with that? Just $10.
Well, it's just like anything. When you go to the gym or when you try to eat healthy, you know, it's unlikely that you can like cold turkey quit everything. You know what I mean? You say, okay, yeah, I'm not going to eat bread for a while and see how I feel.
Right.
You're like potatoes, rice. I'm going to do all that stuff.
But I think for me, it's like 4 hours, but
yeah, exactly. You know, I just went to Chick-fil-A for every day for a month and just got the same salad. It made it easy.
Did you really?
So just try to do things that are things that you can repeat over and over again. If it's $10 a week, may I get $10 a week? You know, you're just building that muscle.
Did you do that, OG? Did you do that?
Absolutely.
I like
Market to still have, grilled chicken. Do they still have the peach milkshakes there?
That's what I was going to say. If I was going to Chick-fil-A every day, I would be on the peach shake diet.
Me too.
Well, although I did see the last time they have a holiday peppermint one. I was like, oh my goodness. And then the person who was helping us said, well, I like to mix mine with like chocolate and Oreos, and it tastes like peppermint ice cream with Oreos in it. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's a bridge too far.
Yeah.
And then
you notice I ordered the market salad with chicken.
Stop it. Number four on our list of myths is risk is risky. It's only savings. Paula, how would you counter that one, that risk is risky?
Well, I mean, risk is risky by definition. The question is, what type of risk are you willing to take on and what level of risk? You know, risk is not one dimensional, nor is it linear. So there isn't just one amorphous boogeyman out there called risk. There are different forms of risk. There's leverage risk there. You know, if you're borrowing money, there's the type of risk that we often conflate with volatility, meaning that an asset will, go up and down over time. It'll have a bit of a roller coaster. There's risk associated with career risk, starting a business, right? There's all of these different forms of risk. And the way that applies to your investing decisions, right? How you're going to modulate the risk in your investments as compared to other types of risk/stability in other venues of your life, right? So there are all of these different types of risk. And so to say risk is risky, yes, it is, but that's so simplistic that it doesn't cover the different styles, forms, dimensions of the varieties of risk.
Paulette, hanging out with us live here on Fireside, has emojis of minds blowing. And Paula, you just keep bringing them. What the heck's up with you today? What's going on? Well,
thank you.
Did you eat your Wheaties this morning? Like what's what the heck is going on?
I'm so excited about my upcoming trip to Texarkana.
Yes, exactly.
It's
good just, answer.
All the adrenaline. It's just keeping me going.
I don't know how you sleep at night. Seriously. I mean, wide awake. I was wide awake for weeks before I moved here. So Len, it's funny when you were talking about risk on one end of inflation, right? If you put your money in a guaranteed account, you've got this risk that your money's going to lose money in terms of purchasing power. Paul is talking about volatility risk, talking about all these other types of risk. It sounds like there's really no way, based on what you said combined with what she said, there's no way to completely avoid risk.
No, the best thing you can do, and what we do in engineering, of course, is that's one of our main things that we do, is we evaluate risk. And what you have to do when you're looking at every choice you're going to make financially, you've got to assess that risk. You do that by looking at the consequences versus the probability of something occurring, right? So you put that on a graph and you map those, and then you can evaluate how much risk you truly want to take. If something has a low probability of occurring, but it could be totally catastrophic if it does happen, you know, maybe you're okay with that just because there's a low probability of something going wrong. Where on the other hand, something might have a high probability of occurring, but a very low consequence, it's probably worth taking that risk, you know, maybe because of the consequence is low. It could happen, but if it does happen, it's not going to hurt you too much. So you just have to kind of look at risk and evaluate each individual decision on its own merit.
I love that, though. Plan for all the different risks that might attack you and just think about the consequences ahead of time and go in knowing what they are. That's,
yep.
Yeah, I really like that. Sticking with you, the last one on this list, you don't need emergency liquidity. And man, this is my least favorite discussion. We have it over and over, and there are these people who just, no, you don't need it. No, you don't. And some people I know and I respect a lot, but holy cow. I just want to very quickly take the pulse of the three of you and we'll let this one go. Len, do you think you need an emergency fund?
Yes.
Paula, do you think we need an emergency fund?
Yes.
OG, do we need an emergency fund?
Can I say no just to
I know. Spark Joe that? Pretty much scared the crap out of all of you to say yes. Like, just say no, OG.
No, I don't think you do. I mean, I don't think so. Crypto. I mean,
so overrated.
Sorry. Credit card accessibility. I've got so much money I could charge tomorrow on credit cards if I needed it.
Use OPM.
It is great. Doug, do you need emergency fund?
Yeah, I got like 75 cents in my pocket. Yeah,
there it is. And by the way, it's interesting. And OG and I had this overwhelming discussion a few weeks ago. And OG was like, really? You're going to, what was it that you said, OG, that I'm going to draw the line here? Like, this is what we're passionate about.
Die on that hill.
Yeah, we're going to die on that hill, which is, you know, when I was a professional financial planner, we used the term cash reserve. And then I noticed that the blogging community used the term emergency fund. I thought, well, they're the same thing. So I'm going to switch over. But then when I think of cash reserve, I think about it as an opportunity fund, right? And you hear people go, well, you know, there were these great tickets to Cartagena on Southwest Airlines last week. And I know some people go, well, that's my emergency fund. I wouldn't spend it on that. Well, no, it's your cash reserve. It's your money. If the stock market goes down, it's your opportunity fund. Is there a difference between a cash reserve and emergency fund? Paul, are you willing to die on that hill?
I mean, I've always used cash reserve as a phrase for the money that I keep in reserve for my business or my businesses. And emergency fund as a phrase that references money that's only set aside for emergencies.
But if there were cheap tickets or the market went down a bajillion points, mm-hmm. and you were going to buy low, would you raid your emergency fund for that cash?
No. So then what I was going to say is there's a third category outside of emergency fund and cash reserve. Third category that's just savings.
Wow.
So, I've made my savings.
So you said money in a save, and that's, you don't think of that as a cash reserve?
No. I think of cash reserve / emergency fund as the business / personal specific bucket set aside for emergencies. And then beyond that, there's savings. Sometimes I also refer to that as just a cash cushion, like money that's just kind of hanging out in my bank account beyond what I need.
I think that's a whole different, I think it's going to take us a whole episode to figure out where Paula's going with all this.
Paula has like six different piles of cash sitting around somewhere.
Right.
So
right.
If you're looking for a little bit of liquidity, go find Paula.
Right. She's coming to Texarkana to bury money in somebody else's backyard. In fact, right. Doug, are you ready to see who's winning our trivia?
Yeah, who is winning our trivia? I can't remember.
Well, here is the deal. We have a year-long trivia contest going on between our three contributors. And Paula Pant, I have some good news and some bad news.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with the good news.
The good news is you got time.
Paula, you should have this memorized by now.
The good news is you have time still, Paula. But the bad news is it's running out. Because the score... Paula has 12 and OG pulled back into a tie with Len, or Len pulled back into a tie with OG. I don't know, but they've been duking it out there at 15-15 and Paula has 12. So who's going to get one closer to the big victory? We got to write to the guy at the beginning of the year that said he was going to make a cake. Remember that guy? That's kind of the cake has to be our trophy. I feel bad that I don't remember his name because it was very nice of him to say, you know what, we need a cake or something, and I'll pitch in with the cake. So I can't guarantee how great the cake will be because I don't know him, but at least there will be cake. So at the very least,
you'd happily eat the cake sent to you from a stranger.
I would happily. That's a good. What are you going to be so logical? It's cake. What could go wrong? All right, Doug, ready to see who's going to win this week's trivia contest?
Let's do it. Hey there, stackers. I'm the most notable backside-only denim model in the industry, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. You know, it's Calvin Klein's birthday, and according to businessoffashion.com, the site I go to whenever I'm deciding where it's fashionable to invest, he founded his company in 1968 with just $10,000. Less than a decade later, his annual revenues had increased to $30 million. He also had some of the most famous ads in the world, launching models like Kate Moss and Eva Mendes. What gets between you and your Calvins? Nothing, according to the ad campaign, but when I'm sneaking into a movie, it's a 3-pack of Pop Rocks, a Slim Jim, and a Capri Sun.
Is that what, are you trying to say that's a Slim Jim in your Calvin Klein's?
Well, okay. Why did you have to go there?
Sorry. Just wondered.
Let's get back to the trivia. Let's not focus on the summer sausage. When Klein sold the company in 2002 in a deal that included about $30 million in stock, yes, it's more like a summer sausage, as well as licensing rights and royalties that were estimated between $200 and $300 million. But here's the trivia question. How much cash did Klein get as part of the sale? I'll be back with the answer right after I ask Joe's mom, do these jeans make my ass look big?
Oh, what comes around goes around. And Paula, you get to guess last. And Len, because you're the returning champion, you, sir, have the honor of kicking this thing off. How much cash did Klein get as part of the sale of his company?
Oh, my gosh. I'm wondering if this is another one of those trick questions. My goodness. I have no freaking clue. What can you tell? What were all the other numbers you threw out again? Like he got X stock and
he had $30 million in stock.
Yeah.
And licensing rights and royalties estimated between $200 and $300 million.
Oh, wow.
You were focused on the Slim Jim.
But what you want to know is how much cash did he receive?
I want to know how much cash. You know, there were components of the whole deal.
I gave you two of them. This is another one of those tricky questions. So, but I don't want to get, I can't get too extreme because, well, I'm going to be Chelsea Brennan anyway. So I'm going to say $1
million. $1 million. Mr. OG.
Do we know who he sold his company to?
We don't have that information in the question.
Okay. So he got 3 million stock. What are we laughing at?
I'm laughing at Paulette hanging out with us, who is our writer, who said, okay, this is clearly the worst trivia question in the history of questions.
No, it's pretty much like how they all are. So
Paulette, the popcorn in the building. The popcorn and the golden in the what was that? The
yes, I think the writing was spot on. I think you're good.
I'm gonna say it was a much different number. I'm just gonna go the other level. You know, that's $30 million of stock to what company? I don't know to whom he sold Calvin Klein. That would be important to know. Because then I could give a sense of what the stock might be worth.
Well, didn't he say the stock was $30 million?
Yes. That's how much he got in stock.
He got $30 million in stock. Oh,
yeah.
And then
he got $30 million in stock, and he got licensing and royalty rights that were between $200 and $300 million. Those were two components of the deal. Another component would be a cash component. So how much was that?
Yeah. I'm picturing him as Tommy Hilfiger. And that's a or Ralph Lauren.
He is just really like short. Tommy Hilfiger, except his name is Calvin Klein.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go the other side. I think this was a big number in cash. So, that's what I would want if I sold my business. My friends would call me cash money. So I'm going to say, $650 million.
Wow. He went exactly the opposite way.
Other side. Good luck, Paula. Wow.
Good job, OG. Now that's how you play the game.
All right. Between the two, I do think that it was a bigger number, but I don't think it was necessarily that big. So I'm going to go with $649,999,000.
That's such bullshit. And 99 cents.
So wait a minute. So how come you did that and not 1.1 million?
Why wouldn't you go halfway?
Enough. But, she's made her choice. She's like made a dollar her more choice. Than halfway,
dummy. Then you get like all the downside too. Then,
dummy.
And then capture.
Are we going into the dummy boat. Range now?
Paula was on fire until that choice right there.
That's what I think when OG starts calling people dummy. You know what that translates to in trivia world?
I'm about to get
I think it translates to fine guess, Miss Pant. I think that's what he's really saying right there.
But your gamesmanship.
Yeah, but we
it's valid. There are definitely some tactical improvements that could be made to Chelsea Brennan's strategy.
Yes.
To the Chelsea Brennan technique.
Well, we'd love to tell you who the winner is here, but we don't play that way. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
All right, we are back. And Len, you kicked it off with $1 million, and clearly OG and Paula had different thoughts.
Hey, you can chalk this one up as a win for me.
What if it's no cash, Len?
That's what I really thought the answer was. I thought the answer was zero.
Could be
that's
a no cash
I
truly, deal.
I thought it was another one of those trick questions, but I didn't want to just do that.
And OG, your cash money, if it's $100 billion...
Yeah, it has to be the complete other way.
Exactly. Above 650 million. Paul, are you feeling confident on this one? Of course, you chose the middle last time and totally missed out on that.
Yeah, you know, but I think capturing the middle, I mean, I'm responding to the price anchoring that's in front of me. And we'll see how it goes.
All right, we are going to see how it goes. Doug, you ready with the answer? Here we go.
Stackers, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and good news, my ass looks huge in these jeans. Yes, it's real, and it is spectacular. Speaking of jeans, Calvin Klein was the reigning fashion icon in the 80s with worldwide retail sales estimated at more than 600 million and a distribution network of 12,000 stores in the United States alone. His annual income even passed $12 million. However, things went south in the 90s and Klein faced possible bankruptcy. But through his highly popular underwear and fragrance lines, both of which I'm wearing right now, he has once again been able to stack the Benjamins. So by the time he sold, how much cash did he get for the business? Well, in addition to the stock and licensing rights, our answer is... And this pains me to no end to reward the ineptness of the guests, a whopping $400 million in cash, which means Paula is our winner.
No yes! Woohoo!
It's just not right.
Finally!
I wanted to lie so badly on that answer and say that it was a $10 billion deal.
This is a no cash deal.
Congratulations,
Paula.
Oh, I'll take it. As soon as you said this pains me to no end, I was like, he's about to say zero.
That's what I thought I won.
Paula, you're back in the game. 13
I'm back
15,
in the game.
15. Yes,
I know. I'm closing the ranks. I'm 11th hour making it happen.
I know everybody hanging out with us live on Fireside. I can't wait till next Monday for the next edition to see if Paula has follow through here.
Speaking of, we have four more trivias this year.
We have four more. We have four left.
Four or five?
Yeah, maybe? Four, because the Black Friday episode, we won't have a round table. Mm. We do our board game episode then. So we're down to four left. Yeah.
Paul is behind by three. So, this could be fantabulous.
Well, two to tie, right? Two to tie. But to your point, somebody's going to win the other one. So she really needs to take three and have the other guy split the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And I just added up to five.
Well done. Good thing Joe is not.
That's great. Yes. So we're going to move into the second half, which is where we'd love to hear myths. Maybe you didn't hear your myth. Maybe there's a myth out there that you are thinking about that you'd like to talk about, something that drives you crazy that people shouldn't think. Let's mix it up with our crew here and the crew contributors. If you've got other myths that you're thinking of, it's time for us to talk about those. So here we go. Second half of our discussion on financial myths. This half of the discussion brought to you by Magnify Money. Doug, you know what happens when you go to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money?
Your wood floors get a fine luster?
Absolutely not, actually. But wouldn't that be a great perk of going there? If you head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, you'll find that savings or checking account that you have at your brick and mortar bank, probably not best in class. They rate over 92% of the financial products found at banks, whether they're online or at brick and mortar banks, against each other. Head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. And Paula, every time I say forward slash now, I always think of you. I'm like, how old am I? But at least I didn't say www dot. So
exactly.
Yeah, we're good there. I'm in that middle range part. By the way, on that note, we were also on our recent vacation. We stopped in at a board game cafe because that's what most people do on their vacation, right? And we were playing this game that was like boomers against younger people. And so we had Nick had to answer questions that older people would get. And we had to answer questions, Cheryl and I, that younger people would get. And the problem is that I work in an industry where most people are younger than me. So we were mopping the floors. I felt pretty proud of myself, Paula. I was like, hey, I can compete. But
what's an example of a type of question that you would have gotten?
I knew you were going to ask that and I'm blanking, but let me tell you, I was pretty kick-ass at it.
I believe you.
Just saying. Yeah. I can't think of one. I don't remember if it was an older person question or a younger person question, but which one came first, the Backstreet Boys or New Edition?
Well, I've never heard of New Edition.
New Edition.
Well, there you go. I think that might be the older person one, and that might be why right there. That's not what we're doing.
You know, that might be a bridge between the two generations, actually.
And a lot of the questions were too. But anyway, we are way off track. We want to get back to financial myths. OG, you see people that come in with some preconceived ideas about their money or things that they have to think about. What's one myth you wish that people didn't bandy about?
That there's such a thing as good debt.
Oh, so what do you mean by that?
I think a lot of people are just kind of sucked into the concept that borrowing money is a great idea or, you know, well, with interest rates this low, I mean, how can you not, you know, that sort of thing. And it's like, it's true. It works with leverage, and leverage is very sexy and it's seductive, and you can show up to buy a house with like a little bit of money and you get this cool house with all of this neat stuff in it. And you only had to come out of pocket a little bit of money to make that happen. But you have years and years and years of a commitment there, you know, thereafter. So it's like death by a thousand paper cuts type of thing. And so,
right.
So we lull ourselves into thinking that there's such a thing, mortgage debt or school loans, you know, I'm furthering my career or something, but all debt sucks. And if we just come from it at that perspective, then I think we have a different attitude toward it and say, you know, we should work really hard to pay this off.
In the
conjunction of your overall plan.
Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Yep. And then when you do use leverage, you've got a healthy respect for it too, I would think.
Oh, I personally do not have a healthy respect for leverage, but yeah. I can imagine what it would be like if I did.
What you probably should do. Well, Len, you know, it's funny, as OG's talking, I'm thinking of a myth that I had, which was one that related to his, that's the mortgage industries of, you know, renting is throwing money away, right? Do you think it's also the mortgage and lending industry as well that are behind good debt versus bad debt? Like, no, this is good debt. You're fine. It's good debt.
Yeah, maybe that's true. I mean, that's one thing that one of the universal things now is, or at least always used to be, is, you know, buying a home's a great idea. And that's not necessarily true anymore, right? Especially as prices keep going up. So, they could be. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Paula last, cause she's been on fire this show. So Len, which means Paula, the bar's going to be high. We're waiting for like the mind blowing myth that you're thinking about, but Mr. Penzo, not to be outdone, what's a myth that you wish people didn't have with their money?
Well, I'd stick with the realm of mortgages, and I would say paying off the mortgage. You know, people will say that paying off the mortgage is an ideal thing to do. And I am of the, that's how I used to be. I mean, I used to think that, and I don't think that anymore. I think now you have to be careful about whether you are going to pay off the mortgage early or not.
So basically the exact opposite of what I said.
Yeah, actually, yes. I'm one of those, there is such a good thing as good debt. I guess I'm the opposite. When you said that, OG, I was like, oh, okay. Well,
but I don't know though.
No. I think that it's just the phrase, right? Debt can be used successfully. I mean, you see companies do it all the time, right? You know, but they're headed by a board of directors and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And my frustration is that people just fire hose it in the face. You know, it's good debt, blah, you know, and here it comes. and you're like, no, dude, it's, you know, it's not.
A great example for me of good debt is like if you want to start a business. I mean, if starting a business and you don't have the money, you got to start somewhere, right? And so if you have a good business idea with a good business plan, you got to borrow the money to get started. So, I mean, if not, what are you going to do? Wait 10 years to try and save up to start your business? You know, so to me, that's a case of, yes, it makes sense to go into debt.
But does that make it good debt or just more prudent debt because you have a cash flow stream that you're waiting on that will pay down the debt?
Okay.
I mean, yeah. Are we semantics here?
Yeah, I think we're, well, if
it's 100% semantics.
If the term, yeah, good, I mean, if you're going to, of course, all debt is crap, right? I mean, nobody wants to be in debt, right?
There,
but yeah, maybe good debt, good is a poor choice of words. But it gets the point across.
It's just a phrase. It's like what we were talking about earlier about using the word cash reserve or emergency fund or savings versus investing. You know, when we kind of put it in our heads, like, you know, oh, well, this is good debt. It's like, no. Just call it debt. It's debt. You don't have to like give it an adjective to describe it. You can just call it debt. And if you call it by what it is, now you can decide how it fits in the whole, you know, in the whole plan. But if you put a little stank on it and it sounds like, oh, well, I shouldn't pay off my house early. That's good. That's
look, good to the, well, the danger, is, the danger though, not. The danger though, is if you do it that way, then people, I mean, somebody might take it to an extreme and say, well, I'm not going to go into debt. I want to start a business, but you know, I'm just not going to go into debt. Whereas, you know, you have to distinguish between going into debt to buy a car that you don't need, an extra car or something.
Len, hold on a second. We got Lily here who I think may agree with your argument. Lily?
Hi, thanks for having me up. So my question, as you guys are talking about this, right, isn't this dependent on interest rates? Because for instance, you could pay off a car and we've had record amount of auto loans, right? But instead there's some people that could pay for that car, but because it's, you know, 0%, 2.5%, whatever, and they're earning more in the stock market or through other investments, it makes sense to, you know, go into a position like that where you're technically in debt because you're using your money to make more.
Except I would, and I agree with you, if you're saying, you know, should I have the money invested or should I have it, you know, versus the car loan or something like that. Except I would say that the vast majority of people who use that logic don't actually have the money sitting in the bank account or in the investment account.
Yeah, that's where the liquidity comes in, right? If you have the liquidity to back yourself up, if you lose your job down the road, then that's okay. I mean, because I do that too, Lily. Our last car we bought, we could have paid for it in cash up front, but we took the 0%
twice
financing.
Over even.
Yeah.
The money you have.
But we had the liquidity. If something would have happened, we could have paid for that car at any time.
Paula, is this about the interest rate? Yeah.
Well, it's tangentially related to the interest rate, but perhaps where this is going is that debt is either cash flow positive or cash flow negative. And so in the example of the car, if you do have sufficient investments that you're arbitraging the interest rate that you're paying on that vehicle, then that debt, in a sense, is cash flow positive because the money that is in that investment brokerage account is generating returns that are in excess of the interest that you're paying on the vehicle. And so when you compare the two line by line, it is an arbitraged and therefore cash flow positive form of debt.
There's something interesting here too, which is we recently talked to Wes Moss on the show, Atlanta radio personality, and Wes just wrote a book, a research book about what the happiest retirees know. And he said that the happiest retirees, when they did this research, they knew the math. They knew the math that Lily's talking about, but the people that paid off their debt generally, and I don't remember the methodology about how they looked at this, but they were happier. People that knew the math but still paid off their debt earlier were generally happier. What do you think about that?
Well, certainly there's the financial question and then there's the emotional satisfaction question. And I think from the point of view of emotional satisfaction, of psychological comfort, there's a lot of benefit to paying off debt. And this relates back to kind of a comment that I made earlier when it comes to deciding what level of risk you want to take on and how that fits with other risk factors in your life outside of just your investments. So if you have the risk of not having any current income coming in because you're retired, you know, therefore you have income risk, i.e. your income is fixed or low due to retirement, then yeah, you offset that by taking on less investment risk. And on balance, all of that allows you to sleep more easily.
It's like freedom from worry. Lily, before we say goodbye to you, are you a creator here on Fireside?
Yes, I'm a new creator. So I'm hopping into rooms to feel it out. So
yeah.
Thanks for having me.
And I wanted to ask you for our audience too. What are you creating so maybe our audience can follow you in the future?
Well, I am thinking around different investing ideas, trying to be ahead of what we're seeing play out like on a Bloomberg terminal or on CNBC and kind of just thinking around the issues. So
yeah. And it's interesting how the numbers that you talked about, you know, that versus the behavior too, I think is fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. Behavioral finance is really interesting. And there's just so many ways you can think about things, you know, whether you're going through a specific investment for like arbitrage. Some people get very attached to names. There's narratives. There's a difference between loving a company and loving a stock. Right. Those are different things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting too emotionally involved.
Way to go, Joe. You just invited the fox right into the hen house. She's going to steal our whole audience.
Yes.
Great job.
Both listeners are now going to Lily. Yeah. Lily, thanks for hanging out with us. That was a lot of fun. Paula, enough procrastinating.
Well, I feel like in terms of the myths that we've already discussed, I mean, we've covered the good ones, right? We've covered the, is there such a thing as good debt? We've covered the myth of, you're supposed to own a house no matter who you are and no matter where you live. We've covered the myth of, you're necessarily always supposed to pay off your mortgage. So I think the good ones have been taken.
Oh no, I think there's another one. I think that's a cop out.
I will go with, and this is maybe a slightly more obscure one, but the myth that you need to prioritize building a credit score, building and maintaining a credit score above many of your other financial goals. I say that because I've talked to many people, particularly younger people, who believe that they really need a credit score, or that's like one of their top concerns, even though they have no imminent plans to buy a home And true, they're going to need one to rent an apartment. They're going to need one to possibly get lower car insurance rates. Sure. You know, buy a cell phone. But when I hear people who have a lot of credit card debt and a lot of student loans and they're living paycheck to paycheck, and yet the thing that they're worried about is their credit score rather than their net worth or the balance in their bank account, my response is, look, you're focusing on the wrong number. The score that you want to be keeping track of is your net worth or your bank balance, not your credit score. That's the distant third place.
That's a fantastic one. And OG, I think about that, about how people focus on what Paul is talking about instead of getting just a solid financial footing. I feel like if you could start off with just a solid financial foundation, like the credit score comes with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, a credit score is just a reflection of what you've done in the past. So if you do the right stuff in the past, your credit score will be fine. It's when you start doing dumb things in the past, then your credit score is screwed. So don't do dumb stuff.
I think that's
hashtag don't do dumb stuff. TM.
That's a great place to end it. Isn't that what you're trying to say, Paula? Don't do dumb stuff.
To an extent, but also don't waste your time or spin your wheels trying to game the credit system, taking out new credit cards so that you can increase your debt utilization ratio, blah, blah, blah. I mean, fine. If you're already like smooth sailing everywhere else, and now you've got excess time and you want some icing on the cake, sure, you can play that hack. But if you have a net worth that's in the toilet, then you've got bigger problems to think about.
AKA don't do dumb stuff.
Don't do dumb stuff.
All right. I think that's going to do it. Let's find out what's happening where all of you live and work. OG, big plans this weekend?
Yes. Just lots of travel. Busy, busy, busy.
As per usual in the OG life. Mm-hmm. Mr. Penzo, what's going on at lenpenzo.com?
You know, this is funny because just I have five personal finance tenets that aren't as smart as they used to be.
Oh.
That is on lenpenzo.com, and you can come and see which ones I picked.
And did you just make one of those?
OG, you might want to come over and learn something too.
You're going the same place. That was good. That was good. Paula Pant, what's happening in the Afford Anything podcast?
I was going to say, to Len's comment, I also have five tenants who aren't as smart as they used to be.
not doing as well as they used to do?
No. They're all great. So on the Afford Anything podcast, of course, Joe, you join me every other week to answer questions that come in from the community.
We have so much fun.
So much fun. That's always a highlight. We also, he was on this show, Robin Wigglesworth, who wrote the book Trillions.
So good.
Honestly, I learned about him on this show recording the roundtable, and he sounded so great. I invited him onto my show.
But he's a great interview, isn't he?
He is. And I talked to him for an hour, and he describes the invention of the index fund, all of the drama around Jack Bogle. So it's a history lesson.
It is mind blowing. It's not what you think it is. It didn't happen the way people think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I've ever done like a history episode on the Afford Anything podcast. Normally we're, you know, either conceptual and philosophical, or we're actionable, but
Paula,
like,
our cease and desist letter is in the mail.
You can serve it to me over a steak at the Sizzler.
That's right. That's why Paul is really coming to Texarkana. Paul, I have a present for you. Would you get here? Right. Well, I know you and I have interviewed people in the past, and you always ask such different questions than we do, that I've heard from all of our joint listeners that it's a good 1-2 punch. So if you really like Robin Wigglesworth, I'm sure Paula and Robin had a much different conversation than Robin and I had. And man, what an interesting guy to talk to. So good.
Absolutely.
Stuff. And that's it. Afford Anything, where finer podcasts are distributed.
Exactly.
All right. That's going to do it for today. Doug, you got it from here, my friend. What should we have learned today?
Working with amateurs. So what should we have learned today? First, denim is a very lucrative career if you're willing to exploit sexiness to sell it. A tactic we here in the basement have never stooped to, due to the fact that we're all out of sexiness, except on Fridays when Len visits. Second, OG said something really important, but as usual, he used lots of big words, so I'll give you the TLDR. The best time to plant a tree was yesterday. The second best time is today. Don't keep putting off your investing until you think you have enough money. Start small and start now. But the big lesson? If you like big butts and you cannot lie, you gotta look at these jeans. I mean, even Becky thinks I seriously, seriously got back. Thanks to Paula for joining us today. You'll find her podcast, Afford Anything, wherever you're listening to us today. Thanks also to Len Penzo for joining us. As soon as you're done here, go check out lenpenzo.com/mortgage payoff calculator. Today's show was written by the brilliant Paulette Perhatch. Paulette, we told you to stop writing that. I know, it's next year. Doug actually has a flat... Come on, Paulette, I don't have a flat butt. Jeez, Joe, we need another new writer. Anyway, while she's not putting words in my mouth, she helps writers power their work and businesses power their words. See how she can help you at thatwriterpaulette.com.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. What happens in the after show stays in the after show. And what a fun topic that was. And what a great time I had the last hour, guys. But and Paulette, we were talking about earlier, putting words in Doug's mouth. And some brilliant words, by the way, Paulette. But we also sometimes have stuck our foot in our mouth. And I was wondering about doing the opposite, where you say something that is just so bad that you just want to, you want to take it back. Right. And I'll give you one. I was at a Detroit Pistons game. Grant Hill was playing for the Pistons and he had these brand new shoes called Fila Hills. And I was very lucky. I knew a guy who called me and he had second row seats, those seats that are in the folding chairs right along the court. And I sat there and we started drinking beers. I hadn't seen this guy for a while, but Grant Hill comes out with these brand new Filas that he had. And the shoes just look awful. They just look absolutely, they're these white shoes. And I thought they looked awful, but they were white shoes with just a blue stripe up the middle. And they looked, I don't know, they look like socks with a little blue stripe. You can probably Google them now and you'll see what I'm talking about. But so at the beginning of the game, after I have a couple of beers in me, I said, you know, I think those are kind of ugly shoes. And in the second quarter and at halftime, when they come up to warm up again, I'm like, man, those are some ugly ass shoes. Those shoes are horrible. And then Grant Hill inbounds a pass right in front of me at the end of the third quarter. And by now, I'm glad I'm not driving home. And I said, I've decided, really loud voice, not really thinking. Yeah, okay, I've decided those are some ugly ass shoes, but I don't know. And I joked to my buddy, I said, you think he gets paid to wear them? And the dude in front of me turns around and his face is bright red and he goes, hell yeah, he gets paid to wear them. And if you write me, I'll tell you how much. And he sticks this card in my face and he's the Fila rep. And I have been bad mouthing the shoes the entire game. Not my finest hour.
Classic Joe.
Yes. Paul, you've never stuck your foot in your mouth.
Oh, I have plenty of times. But, you know, in that instance, if I were the Fila rep, I've got to say it was rude of him to make you feel bad about it. He could have just not turned around, kept his mouth shut, you know,
that's
not giving you a bad
research.
Experience.
That's what I was saying. I was saying, right? This isn't my problem that I'm drunk and talking out of without a filter. It's his problem.
I'm with Paulie. It would have been cooler if he'd have, you know, said, give me your address, and then he could have sent you a pair, your very own pair, Joe.
He could
what
have.
What size do you wear?
Fila Rep, if you're cool. If you're listening, Fila Rep, I'll still take them. Joe at StackyBetchmans.com if he wants to apologize to me. Len, you've got to have one.
No, I don't. That I can think of off the top of my head. Not off the top of my head.
Paula just deflected, so she might not have one.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I've done it. I've certainly said the wrong thing a million times, but there's nothing specific that's coming to mind.
OG? And no. Doug?
I'm just trying to think.
I've said,
you know, I don't know. I can't think of anything in particular. I just think that undoubtedly I say and do things that sometimes I wish I wouldn't, you know, but I'm not the guy who, you know, anyways, I almost got kicked out of my kid's football game last week.
Oh,
but whatever.
You the angry dad?
I happen to know a little bit about football, and you know, there's a couple of plays that went on that were a little, you know, suspect, and the we're the visitors, the home side was pretty sure that they had it right. In fact, the home coach was so sure that he decided that it would be appropriate for him to let everybody know that he was right by standing in the middle of the field and yelling at the officials. And so I thought that it would be a good idea to remind him where the coaching box was. So, cause it was clear he was late. And as a parent, I was concerned that he was setting a bad example. So I decided to set a better example by yelling at him from across the field to get his, you know what, back into the coaching box. And then he yelled at me, and then I yelled at him.
Did he really yell up into the stands?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
Which is kind of funny in and of itself, because yes. So then the AD came over. He's like, hey, you got to go. We don't allow that. And I'm like, all right, cool. And then everybody else said, no, he's staying. Your coach needs thicker skin.
What? Really?
Yeah. Like everybody around us and our coaches on our sidelines.
Well, yeah. When you start yelling at fans in the stand. Probably.
Well, in the stand, you know, the stands are, you know, that's the safe place, right? If you're in the end zone, or you're like, you know, the trainer, the chain guy, or you're the picture person, you start mouthing off. Yeah. You get booted out of the, like inside the fence. Absolutely. You can get kicked out of there. But if you're in the stands, man, you can, short of throwing golf balls at coaches, which some places do that these days, short of doing that, like, you know, I think it's, I don't know, you ever been to a baseball game and like the coach does something or the manager does something stupid and you're like, that was a terrible, why would you change pitchers, you idiot, you know?
Could you imagine the MLB?
Could you imagine this, the security guy going, hey, so Sparky Anderson really didn't like that comment, right. So you gotta go. Like, what the hell?
Right. Dusty Baker is upset at you. He's gotta leave.
He's really put off by the fact that.
Yeah.
Hey, OG, I got a question for you. You know, in football, you mentioned the chains, right? And it always amazes me. I mean, you guys, when you're out there, you guys are eyeballing placement of the ball, right? You're out in the field. One of the linemen or some line refs, that you eyeball the placement and you put it on the ground, and then you come and you haul out the chains and you're trying to get precise with the chains, but you've eyeballed the original placement of the ball in the first place. So isn't it kind of all just theater? It's like a kabuki theater, isn't it, when you're running the chains out there?
Here we go.
Well, I just think it's kind of stupid. I mean, you kind of, they eyeball where the ball goes and they just place it on the ground. Okay, yeah, they eyeball it. It's down right here. Okay, now let's bring the chains out and get down to the link, you know, to get the exact, whether it's a first down or not, right? It's all, there's all kinds of errors in the whole process.
What would be your solution?
There's no solution, really. It's like you guys fake it and just say, yeah, it's a first down.
Light him up.
Personal. I know. And I think we're done.
No, I tell you what, Joe, I have said things on this episode that I regret, but.
Well, that really became meta, came full circle.
I say we're not. Apparently we're not done yet.
We're not done yet.
You know.
No. This has been something that keeps me up at night for years. But back in a previous career, I went with a team of people to the Mercury Marine headquarters in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, and did a whole tour of their corporate offices, and we're evaluating. We're setting up for a consulting engagement, and we're evaluating their operations, front office, back office, production facility, the whole thing. We're there for hours and hours and hours, and there were about four or five people from Mercury who were walking us around. And at the end, one of the women said, "Hey, let's go. When we're done here, there's a great bar I know locally. Let's everybody go get a drink." So we spent hours with each other, gotten to know each other. And, you know, I kind of relaxed maybe a little bit too much. And so end of the day, we pull into the parking lot of this bar, and it's like out in the woods on this lake. Of course, you know, we're in Wisconsin, and it's just like this log-sided bar with a big Leinenkugel sign flashing, and it's like Gustafson's or something like that. And I get out of the car, and I'm like, oh man, this is perfect for Wisconsin. It's, you know, some backwoods, gritty, you know, fishing joint that's just, and I'm trying to give this great compliment, like how authentic this is. And we walk, and she just kind of turns and looks at me, and like nods her head a little bit with just this blank look on her face. And we walk in the bar, and she walks around behind the bar and gives her husband a big hug. It's her bar. She owns the bar. I just got done totally backhand complimenting it. It's her freaking bar.
Except she missed the compliment part.
Yeah. Yeah. That part went right past her. Yeah. That's only the story I'm comfortable sharing. There are a lot of others.
Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? And you could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.